This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We welcome in two of our very best Week in Review guests to discuss and debate the issues raised by the top stories in the news this week, and we welcome your views too. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and if you'd like to join us as we talk about the politics or political response to Hurricane Harvey, the resignation of Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, the resignation of DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp, and much more, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests, both in studio, Chris Lotto, a former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Good morning.
Good morning, and I just want to say very quickly, congratulations on your retirement. This will maybe the last time we see each other before you leave the air, but wanted to say what a great job you've done on behalf of Wisconsin Public Radio and broadcasting in general, and thank you for always welcoming me in here.
Oh, thank you.
We can let the fighting begin in a moment, but I want to take that time out.
That was very kind. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it, and I was not making that up, that you are certainly one of the best Week in Review guests we have, as is Matt Rothschild, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Joy. It's great to see you. Congratulations on retirement. Just as one listener, and I know maybe there are listeners out there who don't like you, but I certainly have appreciated your intelligence and equanimity and sensitivity that you brought to the airwaves here.
Thank you so much. That's very kind. And I am going to miss talking with a guest like you, talking with listeners about issues that matter, but I am going to enjoy sleeping in a little bit later and doing some things that my schedule has not allowed me to do. And I will be retiring. My last day will be September 29th. My last Week in Review will be September 29th. So I still have the month to, you still have the month to kick me around a little bit here. So let's talk about David Clark. This was breaking news late yesterday afternoon. David Clark submitted his resignation to Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark was appointed sheriff in 2002 by Governor Scott McCallum, and he is now in his fourth term. A while back, earlier this summer, there was some talk that he was going to leave to join the Trump administration, but that never materialized. Chris, do you know where he's going?
Well, as we were talking about off air, he's a Democrat, so yeah. I have no idea. They're not sharing that with me. It's interesting. It seems to have caught pretty much everybody off guard. And his legacy is one that obviously was controversial, was a very conservative Democrat that always seemed to confound Democrats in the county who and elsewhere that took every opportunity to try and take him out, but he always handily won re-election. As far as where he goes from here, we'll have to wait and see. He apparently is going to have an announcement after Labor Day. We know that there's sort of a mutual admiration society thing going on between him and President Trump, and there, as you alluded to a few months ago, there was a chance that he was going to join the administration. That didn't happen for whatever reason, but we're just going to have to wait and see what he does from here.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Matt?
Not kind ones, actually. I mean, let's be clear. I mean, Sheriff Clark is a buffoon. He is an embarrassment to Milwaukee. He was an embarrassment to the state of Wisconsin. He was derelict in his duties as sheriff with the deaths in jail there, four deaths, including one of a baby that was born there, and the guards said they didn't even know the woman was pregnant. The way he treated the prisoners with the hideous food that he served them was disgusting. He didn't have a temperament that was suitable for being sheriff. A couple examples, he arrested or had people detain a passenger who kind of shook his head at the sheriff on a plane. And then he told Tom Barrett, who had been beaten over the head at the county fair a couple years before, that it's time to crawl back into your hole, Tom, unless you want some more of this, because I have some. I mean, this is a threat to the mayor from the sheriff. I mean, it's outrageous. And then he attacks Black Lives Matter, calling them Black Lives Matter and saying they're affiliated with ISIS. And this is just wholly irresponsible behavior for a public official. Good riddance.
So you don't think, Matt, that he should be joining the Trump administration in Homeland Security?
I don't know. He might fit right in.
Well, we'll see after Labor Day what the plan is. There are conflicting reports online saying that at first somebody said he was going to go to the Trump administration. Then another report said that, no, he's going to go to an organization that is pro-President Trump organization. I'm not sure what that is. Let's shift gears and talk about Hurricane Harvey. Right now it's a tropical depression headed for Memphis after dropping more than 50 inches of rain in Houston last weekend and early this week. The reports now are that the floodwaters are receding now from Houston, but what a catastrophe, what a horrible disaster. Matt, your reaction to Hurricane Harvey and the stories and pictures from Texas.
Well, it was just horrifying. My heart goes out to anyone who is affected there. I mean, just to sit and watch the storm come in, you know, the picture that stays in my mind is of that nursing home with the waters coming up to the nursing home residents' waists and shoulders, and someone's in a wheelchair there. I know they got rescued, but that was kind of one of the starkest images. And, you know, people lost their lives. A police officer was on his way to rescue someone, lost his life. The heroic efforts by not just regular first responders and law enforcement, but the so-called Cajun Navy are certainly to be commended. But I do worry about these once every century storms that seem to be happening every couple of years now.
Chris?
I would echo for the most part what Matt said. When you see the images and video and things that are coming out from that part of the country, obviously your heart goes out to them, and that is the first thing to remember, is that people are suffering and there's going to be a very long, difficult, painful recovery that folks in Texas and Louisiana are going to have to go through in the months ahead. But the pictures that you see of regular folks, you know, going above and beyond, getting out their canoes and going out and searching for people and making sure that their friends and neighbors and others in their community are okay, really speaks to the best of the human spirit and the American spirit, and that's the part that has repeatedly touched me when I see the coverage this week, that you know, we're better than the petty little fighting that Matt and I are about to engage in here in a couple minutes. But you know, we just want to remember and keep in our thoughts and our prayers that the folks that are having to deal with really a devastating storm down there.
Yeah, and we will talk now, though, about some of the politics here. President Trump visited Corpus Christi, Texas on Tuesday, which is about where the hurricane made landfall. He rallied victims and pledged his administration's help to get them back on their feet. Let's take a listen.
We love you. You are special. We're here to take care. It's going well. And I want to thank you for coming out. We're going to get you back and operating immediately. Thank you, everybody. What a crowd. What a turnout.
What a turnout, Matt.
You know, the guy is just so clinically narcissistic that he cannot reach the level anywhere close to the level of being presidential or dignified at a time where it really required dignity and empathy. Even Ari Fleischer, who is George W. Bush's former press secretary, said it would have been nice if the president of the United States could have shown a little more empathy to the people who've suffered there. It's not about the crowds that he can draw.
Yeah, he was criticized by some on the left and in the media for not showing enough compassion or empathy. He didn't meet any storm victims or visit the hardest hit area of Houston. First Lady Melania Trump was also mocked for wearing black high heels as she walked toward Marine One with the president. The next day, Trump flew to Missouri to make a pitch for tax reform, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But then he offered more scripted thoughts and prayers to hurricane victims on behalf of America.
To the people of Houston and across Texas and Louisiana, we are here with you today. We are with you tomorrow, and we will be with you every single day after to restore, recover, and rebuild. Our thoughts and prayers remain firmly with the citizens and our fellow people, great, great people all affected by this tragedy.
So did he make up for the initial response, Chris, with that?
So I think I came to a realization on Trump this week and the haters on out there who will not cut this guy a break no matter what he does. Is he an inelegant communicator? Yeah, he is. And we've seen that for a year or more, ever since the campaign. But, you know, he's going to get criticism no matter what. And if we can't criticism on the federal response, we're going to criticism because Melania wore Manolo Blahnik spiked heels while getting on a helicopter on her way to Texas. I mean, this is getting beyond just, you know, disagreeing with your president and kind of turning into a form of derangement that's, you know, we're really seeing it come to light with what's going on in the hurricane. Let's not worry about what Trump tweets in relation to whether he's showing enough sympathy, whether he, you know, hugged enough victims and felt their pain. But let's worry more about what the federal government is going to do to help those who are affected by Texas and Louisiana. We get so worked up and so in a dither, some of us, about, you know, how he says what he says. Let's pay attention to what he does and make sure that the federal government under his watch is held accountable for what we expect them to do in Texas and Louisiana. And it's going to take some time for us to see that. This is not going to be an overnight recovery. But that's the part that is just aggravated me this week, this idea that we're going to spend more time talking about Melania's shoes than we are about making sure that people are being cared for by the federal government and local government.
Does Chris have a point, Matt?
I'm totally with Chris on Melania. I thought those were cheap shots. I kind of feel sorry for Melania and don't want to criticize Melania, and it's not about her. She didn't sign up for this thing, and I think people should leave her the hell alone. But where I disagree with Chris is, you know, how he says what he says actually matters. He's the president of the United States. Everything that the president of the United States says matters, and the way he says it or she matters. This was a case of covering his tracks after he had made a few bad steps. So the Kellys took over, General Kelly and Kellyanne Conway, I think probably said, look, we got to do something here. It didn't look real good. Or they told themselves that when they were communicating. I assume they communicate together. So he came with a dignified statement that he read that you just played. And that was the appropriate tone that he needed to take.
This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking today with Matt Rothschild, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and Chris Lotto, former Communications Director for the Republican Party and a GOP campaign consultant. We will continue talking about the political response to Hurricane Harvey after this break and other top issues in the news. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking right now about Hurricane Harvey and the response. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives, as we do every Friday at this time, about the top stories in the news. Today we are talking with Chris Lotto and Matt Rothschild, and with you, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Patrick in Richland Center is with us. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, good morning. This question is for your Republican guest there. He said none of us are going to cut Trump any slack. All right. Can you, as far as the media goes, he picked a fight with them right away, calling them fake news. The intelligence agencies told them to act like Nazis. The judiciary system. Can your guest give us an example of more fighting words to the press than to call them fake news? And the real question is, how can he or Trump or the supporters expect any sympathy from any of us? He's picked a fight. Give us that example of how to pick a better fight with the media.
Well, thank you, Patrick. I don't know if we have to put this all on the media, but I think he was reacting, Chris, to your comment that maybe people on the left need to cut Trump some slack and not, you know, go after the way his wife dresses and every last thing that he says. And Patrick's saying, hey, why should we cut him some slack? He's got a lot of fighting words in his background.
I think we have a bigger issue to deal with when we're talking about the hurricane than that. And that's my point, that we don't need to immediately weaponize every single issue that comes down the pike. And that's the point I'm getting at. Has he fostered a contentious relationship with a lot of the mainstream media, as they're called? Yeah, he has. So, I'm not going to deny any of that, and I'm not going to say let's just wipe the slate clean. And clearly, folks out there like your caller have a massive chip on their shoulder about President Trump, and that's fine. It was a contentious campaign. It was a contentious election, and it remains a divided electorate. And he is welcome to his opinion. I'm making the point that in this case, when we're talking about the hurricane, let's back off the Trump hate just a little bit and just make sure that the people are being taken care of by the federal government that Trump oversees.
Greg in New Berlin is with us. Hi, Greg.
Hi, good morning, and enjoy. We're really going to miss you. I wish you a great retirement.
Thank you.
But my question or comment actually can go both ways now that I think about it. What about our senators? Procedurally, why don't they step up and take action to, in this case, provide dollars for FEMA immediately? Because we've obviously elected, unfortunately, a real flake for a president. And all of this whining about the Democrats don't give him a break, they criticize everything, that's just being a crybaby.
Well,
put it away.
All right. So let's talk about, thank you, Greg, for calling. Let's talk about aid, because I thought that's where this was going. So Congress needs to step up and I guess get some hurricane relief, some aid to the victims of the Hurricane Harvey. But there is a bill is going to be before Congress probably as early as next week, and President Trump is promising that this is going to be quick and we're going to pass this right away. Matt, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, this is one of the purposes of government. And it runs contrary to some of the most libertarian philosophies that, we don't need government, so and everything public is bad and everything private is good. This is a case where we need to marshal the forces of the government to help people who are facing a crisis that they can't at an individual level or at the level of charity solve. And so, yes, we need more money for FEMA. I know that the Trump administration was cutting money for FEMA, but here we need emergency money. And I hope they get what they need.
Let me play. Here's President Trump talking about recovery funding.
Texas is a unique place. It's a great, great state, great people. And I think you'll be up and running very, very quickly, really very quickly. So, I think you're going to be in fantastic shape. I've already spoken to Congress, and everybody feels for you and feels for what you're going through.
So will Texas be in fantastic shape when it comes to disaster aid, Chris?
Well, the hint of Trump hyperbole aside, he's in his way trying to set the tone that, hey, you're going to recover, we're going to get through this, and the federal government is going to help you.
Yeah. But we do have some fighting going on, including... It's Chris Christie who is criticizing Ted Cruz for wanting federal disaster aid for Texas when he voted against a federal disaster aid for New Jersey following Hurricane Sandy. Talk some about the politics of that, Matt.
Well, I do think, Chris Christie's right. I mean, it was very hypocritical of Ted Cruz to now say he wants aid when he wasn't ready to provide aid before. And I do think it put some Republicans on the spot. I saw Glenn Grothman, our congressman here from Wisconsin, saying we can have the aid, but we got to cut it from somewhere else. I'm not sure that's necessary to do right now when you got to focus on getting the aid there in the first place. I was surprised to see that Congressman Grothman said we should cut from the military, though. And maybe there's some recognition on some Republicans' part that Trump's expansion of the military isn't necessary at this moment. Can I just take one step backwards, though, in the conversation? Because Chris, a couple times in the last half hour, has talked about the chip on the shoulder of people who are against Trump and suggesting maybe there's some kind of mania or disorder on our part or some of my friends' part. Actually, there are real solid reasons for being very distressed would be put it mildly about what the president's doing when it comes to his attack on the media as fake news or enemies of the people and his attack on the judiciary. This is something that is almost unheard of for a president of the United States. You have to go back to Agnew and Nixon out with the attack on the media. He just is not showing much appreciation for our democratic institutions, small d. And I think that's why a lot of us, including myself, are concerned that maybe our very democracy is in a little more precarious position than it has been for a long time. And so I don't think that that should be written off as just a kind of a partisanship, chip on shoulder. I think there are real serious issues here that we're facing as a country right now.
Let me give Chris also an opportunity to respond to New Jersey Governor Chris Christie calling Texas lawmakers, including Senator Ted Cruz and Senator John Cornyn, as hypocrites for requesting a federal disaster declaration for Hurricane Harvey. They voted against the $51 billion aid package for Superstorm Sandy in 2013, saying it was loaded with pork. Though that's been disputed. Christie said that that was absolutely false and that he hoped that the people from New Jersey and New York would not hold grudges and would go along with aid for Texas. Does Christie have a point, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, he does. I don't know what else to add to that. Mm-hmm. I think he's right. Again, the idea that we need to instantly politicize these things, I guess, is unavoidable in this day and age. But yeah, he has a point. You know, it's this idea that we shouldn't care or don't need to care until it's in our backyard, and then suddenly we do care and we do, you know, have our hand out asking for assistance. And that's I think that runs counter to you know, the American spirit, in a sense, that we want to help others, we want to help those that are suffering in Texas and Louisiana. Just as we would, you know, in Christie's backyard when they went through Sandy. So, yeah, it's an unfortunate bit of hypocrisy, and he's calling it out. But again, there are larger issues that we need to worry about.
Again, the House is expected to vote as early as next week on an aid package for Harvey victims. It's not known exactly what the amount will be. But as Matt referenced, a Republican Congressman Glenn Grothman of Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District says that it should be offset by spending cuts elsewhere. He made the comment at a town hall in Portage on Tuesday. He explained his position in an interview afterwards with Madison TV station WKOW. Let's listen.
We can go through the government bureaucracy, which I think is still too bloated. As I mentioned to the crowd here, I think this 9.5% increase in military spending next year is not necessary. So wherever you look, you can make reductions.
So should the relief be offset by cuts elsewhere, Chris?
I get what he's saying, and it's hard for me to disagree. I see his point, but I do wonder if it's the right time. I wonder if this is the right issue to take this stand. You know, the federal government needs the flexibility to act quickly to help those, you know, hit by the hurricane. And so to see what's going to be much needed aid get bogged down in spending fights in Washington in the already deeply dysfunctional state that we're in, you know, perhaps now is not the optimal time for Congressman Grothman to make that stand.
Mm-hmm. Matt?
Totally agree with Chris on that.
All right. Well, just as Hurricane Harvey was bearing down on Texas last Friday, President Trump pardoned Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was facing jail time for his federal conviction stemming from his immigration patrols that targeted Latinos. He was practicing this while a federal court told him not to. He was found in contempt of court when he continued. Trump on Monday said Arpaio was treated very unfairly by the Obama administration, and also pointed to controversial pardons by past presidents. So what's your reaction, Matt, to Sheriff Joe getting pardoned?
You know, I think it's outrageous, and I think it is the President of the United States once again appealing to the most base sentiments of his political base. It was Joe Arpaio was convicted of discriminating against Latinos, and President Obama has ran a racist campaign against Mexicans, and this is another appeal toward racism, toward his racist base. It was like the things he said after Charlottesville. And I just think for the President of the United States to be playing with fire like this is just abominable.
Chris?
Well, you know, this is the latest in a long line of controversial pardons that we've seen over the decades. And both parties are guilty of it. You know, George W. Bush did it. Barack Obama did it. Bill Clinton did it. And I feel like to a certain extent, how you feel about this particular pardon is likely defined, certainly in large part, by your feelings about President Trump. And then, of course, your own political leanings as well. So, you know, in other words, if you were okay with Obama pardoning Oscar Lopez, who engaged in dozens of bombings, well, you might want to think twice about how you criticize President Trump on this one. You know, and it doesn't make this pardon necessarily right, but it is within his rights to do that. And you might want to ask yourself the real motivation behind your criticism of Sheriff Joe's pardon. I can't say I'm overly surprised by this. I don't think anybody should be surprised by it. This does play right into Trump's get tough on illegal immigration narrative. He was presenting that as a candidate, and now as a president is following through the absence of any definitive action on the wall that he has long promised. You know, in the absence of that, this is a pardon that, you know, to Matt's point, is going to resonate with Trump's base, and clearly that's part of the motivation. I mean, Sheriff Joe is an 85-year-old guy. He's out of office now. And I think that, you know, President Trump recognized from his perspective that Sheriff Joe was getting tough on illegal immigration. And obviously there are those who dispute the actions that Sheriff Joe took and how he treated his prisoners and everything else. But this is clearly a play to the president's base.
Let's take a call. Russ in Ottawa is with us. Hi, Russ.
Hi, good morning, Joy.
Good morning.
So my question was about the pardon of Sheriff Joe. My understanding is that this may be a different use of the pardon power than it's been typically used in the past by other presidents, maybe as to circumvent the courts or to push a president's agenda, where I kind of thought that in the past it was used as a forgiveness tool. And I was curious if any of your guests had examples of other presidents that maybe have used it in this unconventional way. I'll hang up and listen.
I don't know if anybody has that answer, but...
Well, I mean, President Clinton had very controversial pardons while he was walking out the door for a disreputable investor. But the thing that concerns me, I know a lot of lawyers and law professors are looking at the pardon power now and wondering whether this was a peculiar use. I think by reading the Constitution as it was within Trump's authority to pardon. And what I am concerned about is I think it was a signal that there are going to be more pardons to come. I still think he's going to fire FBI investigator Mueller, special prosecutor Mueller, and I think he's going to pardon people preventively, like his son and his son-in-law and maybe other people wrapped up in this Russia thing, and this may have been a signal that way as well.
Yeah, we talked with a guest earlier this week who, he was an immigration attorney, but he also, he was concerned, what you were just saying, Matt, thinking that this was a signal to his campaign cohorts and others that are swept up in this investigation, that don't worry, I will pardon you, is what he was saying. He also said that this pardon was different than other presidential pardons in that the Department of Justice did not recommend it, and it didn't come, you know, at the end of a term, you know, for the typical reasons that are usually given for a pardon.
Yeah, I read the same thing, and I think that, you know, I left my crystal ball at home, so I can't tell you what this means for future pardons. I do think that, you know, if one thing we can agree on with Trump, I hope, is that he is a doer in the sense of a bull in a china shop. He's just going to go and do it, and he's not going to worry about the niceties of you know, and political nuance. That is not his forte. And I think this is another example of that kind of thinking and approach that he is taking to leading and governing.
Yeah, I'm going to take a call from Dave in Madison now, as we touched on pardons of others in the Russia investigation. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't want this to escape people's notice in all the news that happened this week, but it was revealed that Donald Trump last summer, while he was claiming that he had no business dealings with Russians, at the same time had applied to build a hotel in Moscow. And I think if we had known that he was that big a liar, maybe he wouldn't have gotten elected. But this certainly is a conflict of interest, and it stinks to high heaven of that collusion.
Yeah. Is that that report a proof of collusion, Chris?
No. I mean, it's not. I think we have to wait and see where the investigation takes the investigators, and everything else is frankly speculation and based on, you know, he said, she said, and an opinion and anonymous quote unquote sources that we don't know who they are and what they're saying and what their own motivations are, because we don't have names, so we can't examine that for ourselves. We have to wait and see where this investigation takes them.
President Trump's personal attorney said on Monday that Trump's company sought to build a luxury hotel and condominium project in Moscow at the start of the presidential race and requested help from an aide to Russian President Vladimir Putin. So, Matt, is that a big deal or not?
I don't know if this specifically is. I do think he's just increasingly entangled with Russians, Putin, not just Putin, but the oligarchs there. There was a big story in the New Republic about a month ago showing various connections between Russian oligarchs and Russian mafia-type people who were buying overpriced condos and Trump buildings and things as a way maybe of laundering their money. And I do think there's a lot there that Special Prosecutor Mueller will have plenty of material to go after Trump on. I don't think, however, that Dave's right that if this little hotel deal had come out, that Trump would have lost the election. I think Trump was going to win the election because of better tactics and better marketing, and that there was a lot of problems with the Hillary Clinton campaign, some for valid reasons and some maybe not so valid, but look, I've seen polls that have come out after the election, after some of the stuff has spilled out, that said Trump would still win today and beat Hillary Clinton. So I don't think people should be of the mind that this is the thing that tipped the election.
Let's move on to some other issues, as we still have many to go. President Trump made a pitch for tax reform in Springfield, Missouri this week, saying the soon-to-be-detailed plan would reduce the tax burden on the middle class, unlock stronger economic growth, and benefit companies and workers alike. Chris, is tax reform going to be successful?
Well, I hope so. The healthcare battles don't leave me overly optimistic, but really it is incumbent upon the Republicans' leadership in Congress and President Trump to deliver on behalf of the American people, because the optics on, again, post the healthcare fight are not good, and they need to figure out a way to work together. Unfortunately, it feels as though the relationship between the president and leaders in Congress is as let's just say as messy as ever, if not more so. And President Trump is creating a lot of it himself with his his unfortunate habit of tweets and everything else. So they need to figure out a way to get something like this done on behalf of the American people. We don't know the specifics of what the plan is going to be yet, so we can't really comment on that. But the GOP needs a win here, and they need to figure out a way to get this done, because they have to remember that beyond any issues that they have with one another, that there's a much bigger constituency they have to deal with, and that's the American people. So they need to get to work on this.
So, Matt, do you think that President Trump and Congress are going to get it together when it comes to tax reform or anything else?
I think they are going to pass some kind of tax reform. I think this is why Paul Ryan still is playing footsie with Donald Trump, because Donald Trump is serviceable to the Republican agenda. And part of that, central to that Republican agenda, is always, cutting taxes, especially on corporations and the super rich. The idea that the corporate rate cut that Trump is proposing is going to help the American people or help the middle class is a joke. It's going to help a small percentage of the American people. There's a study out by Brookings in the Urban League that says the top 1% is going to get $58,000 each. The top 0.1% is going to get $360,000 each. And everyone in the lower 80% of the population is going to lose money as a result.
Let's get you both to quickly react to a couple of other things before we move on to state issues. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is putting together a panel of experts to discuss transgender individuals who are already serving in the military. Last week, Trump directed the Pentagon to extend or reinstate a ban on transgender people joining the military and gave Mattis time to decide what to do about those already in the service. So, Matt, a comment on banning transgender individuals from the military.
I think it's illegal. I think it's going to be thrown out by the courts as unconstitutional. There are lawsuits already underway by the ACLU and some LGBT legal defense groups. I think the Joint Chiefs and the top brass do not like this. That's why we saw their comments shortly after Trump tweeted and before he gave this order. And it's quite extraordinary that the defense secretary is trying to put the brakes on a presidential order.
Yeah, the real problem, as it is with so many things that the president has done, is perhaps not necessarily the ultimate decision, but it's how he announces it and how he handles it. And the idea of transgender troops is, you know, it is an issue that's worthy of careful review and consideration, and that's what we're seeing the signal from in the military now that we're going to study it. You don't just drop the hammer in a tweet. You know, unless you're Donald Trump, then I guess you do. But, you know, there are serious issues to consider here beyond, you know, the Democrats insisting on boiling this down to an issue of love Trump's hate. This is more than a bumper sticker. So I think that the right approach is to take, you know, time to seriously study it. It needs careful review and it needs a more reasoned response. And the indications are that's what we're going to get.
All right. President Trump is expected to scrap another Obama-era policy that protects nearly 600,000 immigrants who entered the country illegally as children. The decision could come down as early as today, but a senior official also added that Trump could always change his mind. Do you think Trump will take away the protections that were extended to the Dreamers, Matt?
Probably for a couple of reasons. He hates everything that President Obama ever did, and this is something President Obama did. Again, it would be appealing to Trump's anti-immigrant base to take away this protection for the so-called Dreamers. And let's remember that Donald Trump issued an executive order a couple days before the Muslim ban that got most of the attention. But this executive order on immigration was even or equally disturbing. The order said that immigration services can deport anyone who's here without proper documentation, who's ever committed a crime, any crime, anyone who's been charged with a crime, whatever happened to the presumption of innocence, anyone who is chargeable. A new legal term in my experience, anyone who's chargeable with a crime. So under that executive order, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he takes away the protection for the Dreamers.
Chris?
Well, we'll see what happens. But, you know, this is an Obama executive order that Trump did pledge to get rid of. You know, he's obviously following through on a campaign pledge to do this. But let's remember how we got here. It's essentially amnesty for illegal immigrants. Obama issued the order after it was rejected by Congress. So Congress said no, so Obama said, well, I'm just going to go ahead and do it anyway. So, you know, how did we get here? It is through the President Obama's, you know, willful disregard of the legislative process. And I think that it is absolutely fair game for, eradication. The question is, again, how it's done. So, you know, after the initial alarming tweet or announcement or whatever, you know, how are we going to deal with those who are already here? It seems like the prudent course of action is to suspend the issuance or support of new applications and come up with a way to curtail or end renewals of those and look at this as part of a larger immigration policy. And the big question, as far as I'm concerned, is, again, whether Republicans in Congress and President Trump can get that done. But, you know, we can't forget how we got here in the first place. It was an Obama decree that President Trump obviously disagrees with.
All right, we're going to move on to state issues after a short break. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top issues in the news this week. We will talk next about Kathy Stepp resigning her post from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And if you want to comment on that, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. We are talking this week with Chris Lotto, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin, and Matt Rothschild, executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp resigned this week to become a deputy administrator with the EPA. She served as DNR secretary since 2011. She said in a statement that the agency showed it can have job creation and environmental protection at the same time, and she says she looks forward to bringing these principles to the national stage. So, Chris, a reaction to Kathy Stepp moving to become a deputy administrator in, I think it's Kansas City, for the EPA.
State government's loss is federal government's gain. Kathy Stepp did her best to move an agency that is been notorious over the decades for, you know, we all know the old DNR, damn near Russia, thing that people used to call that agency, and she was attempting to find ways to, you know, sort of smooth the relationship and not be as much of a blockade to growth and development in the state, and to find a way to, you know, work public-private partnerships for the betterment not only of economic growth, but to make sure that Wisconsin's environment is protected. So I think she did a good job for the Walker administration, deserves credit for that, and wish her the best of luck at EPA.
Do you think she did a good job, Matt?
She is a disaster. Shameful performance, totally out of keeping with the mission of the Department of Natural Resources. Didn't enforce the law. 94% of companies that had self-admitted that they may have had violations went unprosecuted. 23-year low in fines against companies that had violated the environmental protection laws of the state. Went totally easy on frac sand mines and high-capacity wells. You know, one out of three people up in Kewaunee County can't drink the water up there. It's just a nightmare for anyone who respects the environment and wants to see the beautiful landscape and water and land of Wisconsin protected. I mean, even people in such hardly left-wing groups like Trout Unlimited have been against the DNR's permissiveness on high-capacity wells, for instance, which are sucking up 100,000 gallons of our groundwater every single day.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Tony Evers, the state superintendent of public instruction, released his first campaign ad this week. He, in this radio ad that was released in parts of the state, said that the Donald Trump-Scott Walker $3 billion deal for Foxconn may sound good until you read the fine print. Here we go. Here's a bit of it.
For starters, did you know that the Trump-Walker deal will take Wisconsin taxpayers 25 years just to break even? That means a kid born today could graduate from college by the time we might see a nickel on their return for our investment. But worse, those promised Foxconn jobs aren't even required to be jobs for Wisconsin residents. Contractors that build the facilities aren't required to be Wisconsin contractors. And the deal would exempt Foxconn from critical environmental protections. Sounds good for Foxconn, but what's in it for the rest of us? Just think if we invested that money in our schools instead.
So, Matt, first, your reaction to Evers' ad going after Walker on Foxconn.
Well, on substance, I agree with it. With my political strategist hat, it's a pretty sleepy ad, I thought.
Why? Because it was delivered in a sleepy way? Or
sleepy voice, sleepy music. I don't think you're going to beat Trump by playing this. The one thing that I do agree with the strategy behind the ad, though, and I've been traveling up north giving some talks, people outside Kenosha and Racine are not happy about this at all. They're not wanting to see their tax dollars go to this Taiwanese company, and it's not going to help them if they're not in Racine or Kenosha. So they're just people are shaking their heads about this thing. They're very mad about it.
Chris?
Well, I wish Tony the best of luck with that line of attack, because it's not going to work for them. You know, the administration and the legislature are looking to take a very, you know, it's a bold step in job creation. And we've discussed this before. You know, this is the state of things today. If you want to attract, you know, big business, you have to offer, you know, a big package of incentives to get them there. I mean, that is just the way of the world at this point, whether you like it or not. And so you have now with Tony Evers setting the tone as a Democratic candidate for governor, in my view, actively rooting against job creation and economic development and the overall success of the state. And I don't think most people, it's going to fly with them. I think, you know, he's suggesting pouring $3 billion into schools, and that I'm sure, you know, with his, you know, masters in the teachers union, that's going to, you know, ring their bell, and that's great. But, you know, the governor, by the way, is already advocating a substantial education investment. I don't know if we're going to have time to cover that, but, you know, the Foxconn deal requires due diligence. It requires the legislature and the governor to make sure that what we're investing in is going to deliver on behalf of the people of Wisconsin. We absolutely have to do that. That is a requirement and a responsibility for them to do it. And anything less would be a bad deal for the state. But we also need to be aggressive to succeed. And the Tony Evers of the world are showing that they're not willing to take those bold steps. I'm sorry, Matt, I'll give you a chance here.
Did you want to jump in on that, Matt? Because we do have Ann in Green Bay wants to talk about this. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Well, I would like to refer to the Foxconn as what it really is, as the Taiwanese con job. But anyway, I'm hoping that Tony Evers does not run for governor. I'd like him to stay as education secretary because I do not believe he will win.
Yeah, well, he is running for governor. But Matt, do you think Tony Evers has a chance?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm a betting person. I wouldn't put a lot of money on Tony Evers, though he has won statewide elections before, so it's not impossible. I do think it's good for democracy. Let me just say this, because I don't endorse candidates, tell people who to vote for. It's healthy for a democracy to have open, contested primaries. And the Democratic Party of Wisconsin in the past made mistakes by clearing the field for an anointed person. That's not the way things should go.
We're short on time, and let's get in. The Joint Finance Committee did approve a spending increase of $639 million for public schools over the next 2 years. It would also raise income limits to participate in the statewide voucher school program. Chris, you think this is good for education?
I do. I mean, we're talking about, I think, about $200 a year over the next 2 years per pupil in Wisconsin in terms of an investment, an increased investment in public education. I believe not a single Democrat voted for it, so I'm not sure why that is, other than, you know, nakedly partisan politics, and heaven forbid they show any sign of support for something that the governor's doing.
And Democrats contend the K-12 funding wasn't big enough considering the cuts in previous years and didn't think we should be sinking so much money into voucher schools. But Matt, we have less than a minute. Your thoughts on education funding for the budget?
Well, I agree with this. I mean, it's kind of a joke for Scott Walker to be going around the state championing public education. I mean, he's like the pyromaniac who sets fires by night and then gets his firefighter costume on in the morning, tries to pretend to be the hero. He's not a hero in this little play.
Well, we have just a minute to go. So Labor Day weekend, any plans on this unofficial last weekend of summer, Matt?
Watching the Badgers tonight.
Oh, I thought you'd be bird watching for sure, but
no. I'm going to do that tomorrow morning.
How about you, Chris?
As much golf as possible.
All right. Well, enjoy your September. Thanks to both of you for being here. And I presume you will be invited back when Kate Archer-Kent takes over for me at the end of the month. She will be hosting on an interim basis, and I know we will continue the Week in Review. Chris Lotto, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin, and Matt Rothschild, executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.